Hello and welcome to Loquacious, I guess is what I'm calling this. This is a podcast. I had to come up with a name. So Loquacious means I'm going to be talking about things in an attempt to get a good grade. Today I am talking about Dr. Wernher von Braun, who is probably the most interesting man in aerospace. You'll see why. Werner Magnus Maximilian Freiherr von Braun was born on March 23, 1912, in a small village in the German Empire named Versitz. He was born to his parents, Magnus Freiherr von Braun, a politician that eventually served as Minister of Agriculture during the post-war Weimar Republic, and Emmy von Kiestorp, who was nobility that could trace her ancestry through Philip III of France, Valdemar I of Denmark, Robert III of Scotland, and Edward III of England. He had an older brother, the West German diplomat, Sigismund von Braun, who served as West German Secretary of State in the Foreign Office in the 70s, and a younger brother, also named Magnus, who was a rocket scientist and later a senior executive with Chrysler. So it was pretty clear from a young age that he had a lot to live up to, which is good because he did. He was a smart kid. When he was young, he could play Beethoven and Bach from memory. He had gone to a boarding school near Weimar, the capital, where he didn't do great in his subjects, but after moving schools, he was inspired by space travel and really applied himself to physics and mathematics. In 1930, he ended up attending the Technische Hochschule Berlin, where he joined the Space Flight Society, sort of a primitive rocket association chess club kind of thing in Germany. He worked with Willy Ley and Hermann Oberth on liquid fuel rocket motor tests. They launched two. In 1932, he graduated with a bachelor's in mechanical engineering. That's 2 years. Wanting to pursue a higher education, he then attended the Friedrich Wilhelm University of Berlin and graduated with a doctorate in physics in 1934. This guy, man. Hermann Oberth was a pretty big influence on Werner. Werner is quoted as saying, "Hermann Oberth was the first who, when thinking about the possibility of spaceships, grabbed a slide rule and presented mathematically analyzed concepts and designs. I myself owe to him not only the guiding star of my life, but also my first contact with the theoretical and practical aspects of rocketry and space travel. A place of honor should be reserved in the history of science and technology for his groundbreaking contributions in the field of astronautics." The beginning of Wernher von Braun's astronautical career begins sadly and pretty controversially in Nazi Germany. He was there in that time frame, and the Treaty of Versailles allowed rockets to be developed. I'm not going to go so much into that because that's not really what I'm here to talk about, and I just don't have the time, frankly. And it's such a long thing. So we're just going to give a brief overview of what happened there. While he was working on his doctorate in 1933, the Nazi Party and Hitler came to power, and a big focus of theirs was rocketry. That was a major military focus. They wanted missiles. So he and other people were given grants for their research. To create rockets, which he wanted to use for space exploration, but Nazis had other plans. And by 1934, his rocketry group, we talked about earlier, successfully launched two liquid fuel rockets that rose to the height 2.2 and 3.5 kilometers. And that was very, very promising. Because of the Nazis' interest in rockets, they were interested in Robert Goddard, who is an American physicist, and he first invented the original and the first liquid-fueled rockets. They were more interested in his research, however, as he was an American. And using Goddard's research, which was collected allegedly from journal scraps, von Braun was able to develop the, just a bit of his research, he was able to develop the aggregate series of rockets. A bit of a cough. The first of these to be truly successful was the Aggregat 4, the A4, which would later be known as the V2 in its military state. The first successful V2 launch was in 1942. Adolf Hitler ordered the production of these as a vengeance weapon, and von Braun's group developed it to target London. At the end of World War II, von Braun made it to Austria with a few of his team at the very end of the war. And on May 2nd, 1945, they found an American private from the 44th Infantry Division. Von Braun's brother and a rocket engineer, Magnus, approached a soldier on a bicycle calling out in broken English, "My name is Magnus von Braun. My brother invented the V2. We would like to surrender." Von Braun was questioned in Europe and subsequently brought over by U.S. intelligence as part of the mysterious Operation Paperclip. After being brought over, he was held at Fort Bliss in the Texas-New Mexico border area region thing. They worked on the Hermes project, which was kind of a U.S. introduction to testing rockets and missiles, which wasn't a big focus before. They used refurbished V2s, which they took from the leftovers of the Nazis, and launched them in the New Mexico desert. at the start of the Korean War, von Braun and his team was transferred to Huntsville, Alabama, where they created the Redstone rocket at the Redstone Arsenal. Von Braun was made director of the Development Operations Division of the Army Ballistic Missile Agency. He and his team then developed, from there, the Jupiter C, which was a modified Redstone that ended up sending Explorer 1 into space, our first satellite. After Sputnik was launched by the CCCP, the government created NASA in 1958. 2 years after that, von Braun and his team were transferred to the newly opened Marshall Space Flight Center. He only agreed to go to NASA if he was allowed to continue work on the Saturn rocket. We'll get to that in a little bit. He became the center's first director in July of 1960 and ended up holding that position until January of 1970. His early years there were a little rough. He was working on the Mercury Redstone rockets, which were often problematic. The infamous 4-inch flight was one of his earlier failures, in which the rocket rose a few inches before stopping. It was later determined to be the result of a power plug with one prong shorter than the other because the worker filed it to make it fit. The difference in the length of one of the prongs, the launch detected that there is a difference in the power disconnection as a cutoff signal to the engine. There were more troubles, though. After the Mercury Redstone 2 flight, there was a whole bunch of commotion and problems that were dealt with slowly. And because of this, it is guessed that the Soviets were able to put up a man to space earlier than us. However, nevertheless, Mercury Redstone 3 put Alan Shepard into orbit, or not into orbit, into space 3 weeks after Yuri Gagarin. Wernher von Braun's biggest achievement contribution, arguably, is the Saturn rocket, which he and his team at the Marshall Center developed to carry originally heavy payloads into and beyond Earth orbit. But from this, the Apollo program kind of stemmed for crewed moon flights. During Apollo, he worked actually with one of his former teammates from the old Nazi days, Kurt H. Debus, I don't know, the first director, who was the first director of the Kennedy Space Center, which is pretty famous. His dream to help mankind set foot on the moon became a reality on the 16th of July, 1969, when a Saturn V rocket launched the crew of Apollo 11 on its famous 8-day mission. Over the course of the program, Saturn V rockets carried 6 teams of astronauts to the surface of the moon. So some would say that was, you know, maybe he did a lot there. That wasn't all he did, though. He was also instrumental in the applications technology satellite. He also did some humanitarian stuff, where he went to India and hoped a television program would bring educational help to some of the poorest people in the country. During the late 60s, he was a big part in developing the U.S. Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville. The desk from which he changed aerospace is on display there as a monument to his achievements. He died on June 16th, 1977, the day before my birthday, of pancreatic cancer at age 65. He is buried at the Ivy Hill Cemetery. His gravestone cites Psalm 19:1. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. I know I went over time, but I'm sorry, there's so much to talk about.